Hi, my name is Robin McCormick, and I am the Girls FCA Lacrosse Club Director. This podcast is about all things LAX. We wanted to bring you authentic, fresh, and inspiring information from coaches, players, and others in the lacrosse world, giving you the best up-to-date information in the game of lacrosse as it is evolving quickly. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today. My name is Robin McCormick, and I am the Girls FCA Club Director. We are super excited today to launch our podcast, All Things LAX with FCA Girls. And our guest today is Kathy Reese. Kathy is the head women's lacrosse coach at the University of Maryland. And I'm just going to read a little bit about her. One of the most decorated coaches of the collegiate level, former Maryland standout and four-time IWLCA National Coach of the Year, Kathy Reese has an unprecedented success, standing as all-time winningest coach in Maryland's women's lacrosse history, leading the Terps with 5 national championships, 12 Final Fours, 22 conference championships, and 17 years as head coach. And I think, is this your 18th year, Kathy?
You know, I'm a little, now you're making me sound really old here. I think 18th or 19th, maybe 19th, but we had a year lost because of COVID, you know, so it's just kind of gets a little bit, you know, a little bit messy in there, but old up there.
Well, I'm super excited to have you on, but I was also trying to calculate, and hopefully you know this, but between your player national championships and your coaching, how many together would that be?
So I have 4 playing, and we were one every year. I got to play against you a little bit, a couple times, right?
Yeah.
And 3 as an assistant coach when I worked under Cindy Timshaw when I first graduated college, and then 5 as a head coach.
Gosh, amazing. Yeah. So just to go a little bit, you know, part of this podcast, I was just chatting with Kathy, was to really bring everyone some fresh, current, up-to-date information as the sport, I believe, is just evolving so fast, the women's game. And it's exciting. But like if, you know, Kathy and I did play years and years ago, and we had the opportunity to play against each other in high school, correct? You were Heber and I was Lochgraven. We were generally most times competing for the state championship. And then later, her going to University of Maryland and myself going to Loyola, we actually had the opportunity to compete in the national championship together. And I believe we lost by 1 goal. And then, you know, we kept it going. I've known Kathy for a long time. We kept it going, and we played club ball for a team called Team Toyota. It was a bunch of us Maryland girls and Loyola, I think a few UVA girls. We just love the game and we didn't want to stop. And I still feel the same way, I think, as coaching. You know, you can still love the game, be on the field. You know, part of that, like when I look back at our history, Kathy, like thinking back to like, there were no boundaries. There was no restraining lines. Like I was a low defensive player and I could come over like all 11 of us and score if I wanted, you know. And then recruiting, like we think about, things have changed so much. And I think our high school coaches were our biggest advocate, right, with recruiting.
Yeah, and everything was later, right? It was, you know, senior year, I think senior year spring, I made my final decision. And you're right, all the rules were different. I think one good way for people to really kind of understand the growth of women's lacrosse is you look at the, we talk about the national championship, look at the NCAA tournament. And back in the late 90s, we were seeded number 1 in the country and we had a bye into the Final Four. It was a 6-team tournament. And now there's 29 teams that are selected for the NCAA tournament. And so I think that just speaks volumes to the growth of the sport over the last 20 years. And, you know, we're still growing and you've got, you know, Division I with maybe 120 some teams. And then you've got, you know, Division II and Division III's got like 350 teams. There's so many programs out there with women's lacrosse teams. And it's just super cool to see how the sport's grown over the years.
Yeah, it definitely for the women too. I would say because some, you know, with any kind of growth, it just makes me think of technology, like how fast that's even growing. there's always positives and there's always things, issues that come up. In your, I guess, top of your head, like what would you say there are the most positive things you're seeing in the game growing wise? And then what are some issues?
Well, I think our game is it's really fun to watch, right? It's so fast paced, and the athletes that are coming out of high school and playing at the college level are fast and strong and competitive and smart and talented, and it just puts together, I think, a really good product. We're still struggling for television exposure. We're still struggling for other people to get eyes on our game and see it and love it the way that we do. And so, you're seeing more and more games on linear platforms, whether it's BTN Plus or ESPN Plus. So we're getting games out there for viewership, but trying to get more butts in seats and more eyes on national television coverage is part of the growth of what our sport has really been kind of pushing for and shooting for, because it is a beautiful game and fun. I think fun to watch, but obviously we're biased. But I think when people do get eyes on it, it's pretty cool. I think one of the difficulties too is understanding all of our rules. They're different at every level, which I think is a challenge. You look at the international rules are very different than you have with the professional leagues we're playing, and then you have the college rules and you have high school rules. And high school lacrosse, even in the state of Maryland, and public school was different than private school, right? And with the shot clock maybe and without. And so there's just different rules at all the levels, I think, is something that's made it a little more challenging for fans to really just kind of dive into and understand from one age group to the other.
Yeah. Well, we just started working with Sean Keenan. I don't know if you remember him from
For
Maryland.
sure.
He's a goalie coach for us, and we were just talking about, he's like, man, I think I like the women's game more now than the men's game, because he's gotten so invested in learning the game, and it is slightly different, obviously. But he's like, I actually find myself watching more women's games than men's. So it was just, and I'm like, my husband's the same way, and of
Yeah,
course we
mine too.
have, yeah. It is cool and it's exciting for the game. On a personal level, I was just wondering, what is your morning routine? Does Coach Kathy have a morning routine of, as your season's starting, this is how my mornings are going to flow?
No, Coach Kathy is pretty boring. And as the mom of four, my morning routine is probably similar to most parents, right? Is you're up and getting your kids off to school and make sure that they're organized and have everything that they need. For us here at Maryland, we practice actually 3 mornings a week. So Monday, Wednesday, Friday, we have morning practice. So we'll come in, and mornings for us, it's not earlier than 9. I'm able to put my son on the bus or put my son on the bus or whatever it may be to get down here for practice. But we go 3 mornings a week and 2 afternoons a week. And so we kind of dive right in. But once our season starts, there's girls at the complex all the time. Our athletes are around and constantly stopping by. Maybe it's extra meetings or film sessions, or individuals are just kind of coming by for a chat. But we dive right in, and so you get up, get to work, and off we go, and trying to put together the pieces of the puzzle to make it the best Maryland team that we can be this season.
Are you a coffee drinker? Are
I
you
am a
drinking?
coffee drinker, girl.
Is that all day or is it just one cup a day or
Well,
something?
in the morning, it's you wake up, down, hit go on the coffee maker, make sure lunches are made and kids are ready. They slowly start to come down. I'm probably two, at least have had 2 cups by the time I leave for work. And then sometimes when I get to work, we'll have another pot here too. And if it's an early day and I got to swing through Starbucks, we go with the Starbucks, skinny vanilla latte, or we hit Dunkin'. We got a little of either option.
Yeah, I'm an all-dayer. It doesn't somehow affect me. I can drink
Yep.
it right before bed. So
It's so good. I know.
good. All right. Well, just a little bit about what does it take to be a collegiate athlete in your mindset?
Well, I think there's just a lot that goes into it, right? Once the when we go out and we're recruiting, we're every school, the reason recruiting works is because every school has different needs and the coaches have different styles of play, and there's so many different programs and levels and places for people to explore. And so when the athletes get here, it's just a big commitment, right? And when you're in season, you're allowed to go 20 hours a week. And so that's really given you about 3 hours of practice, lifting a couple times a week. Maybe there's extra conditioning, that's including film sessions. But that's a big chunk of time for student athletes to be able to find the balance between going to school and, crushing it academically and kind of going through those challenges, and then also taking care of business, whatever your lacrosse requirements are. And so there's just a lot of demand. So having that discipline, that you can be successful in everything that you do, doing the right thing, working hard, being committed to what your responsibilities are, both on the field and in the classroom. There's a lot that goes into it. In the off season, we're allowed 8-hour weeks, so things get a little bit slower then, and the athletes have a little more time to themselves. But it's just it, it's a lot of it's a big responsibility and a big commitment for players to play at the next level.
Yeah, I remember, I mean, as a student, I would be like, well, I play lacrosse and then I go to school. But at the same time, you're traveling, you're to me, it helped actually organize me because I think if I had a lot of extra time, I would have been more lost. I think having that specific, like knowing I had to meet deadlines and if we were traveling, communicating with college coaches. But you definitely have to step it up in your game of like making sure you're communicating and you're organized and,
Yeah, and I think, when we go through the recruiting process too, it's the high school athletes are doing it right now. You're playing a sport in high school, you're doing it. You have your academic requirements. Yeah, they're different than college. You have the same, classes every day of the week. In college, that's going to change. And maybe you have, one class 3 times a week or one class 2 times a week. But then you're going to practice. You do have film sessions, you do have other responsibilities. And so where it may not be to the extent of what you'll see at different programs, the high school athletes are doing that, and they're learning how to be organized and to have a routine and to be, have those responsibilities and have that discipline. And so I think that really prepares them for college and for what's ahead.
Agreed. I totally agree with that. So this is kind of loose, but what would you say, and we're going to kind of start touching on recruiting a little bit, but what would you say your top five most important things as a student athlete to focus on during the recruiting process?
During the recruiting process, I think the first and most important thing for everyone to remember is that this is your process and it's unique to you. And I think there's just a tendency for people to get caught up in what other people are doing and what the rumors on the street are or what their friends are doing and who's committed where and who's committed, where else. And so I think it's important to remember that your process is unique to you, and you're going to go through it, on your own timeline, and it's okay to be on your own timeline. So I think that's the first thing. And then I think there's just so many pieces that kind of trickle down from that. With recruiting, coaches are not allowed to reach out to you until September 1st of your junior year. And so just because a coach may view your profile on sports recruits or whatever it is, that doesn't mean that they're interested in you. That doesn't mean that they're going to recruit you. That just means they clicked a button, maybe to look at your profile, maybe by accident, for whatever it is. And I think sometimes there's people just can get caught up in that, thinking, oh, this school's viewed my profile every time. They're going to call me on September 1st, and then it doesn't happen. So I think, that's something to just be aware of, is that September 1st is the start of the process. It's not the end of it, it's the start of it. And everybody's timeline's going to go a little different. There's some people that will know where they're going right away, and there are others that are going to need to visit a bunch of places, and others where an opportunity may not come along until your senior year, and so everybody's timeline is going to be different with that. Other things I think that are important in recruiting is to you follow up with, you're emailing with coaches, you're putting yourself out there, you're sending your information and that you're interested and notes of interest and stuff like that. But I think keeping an open mind, and following the trail of interest, right? When you're a high school junior and maybe you have a list of 10 schools and you don't hear from any of those schools, but you hear from another one that may not have been on your initial list, follow the trail of interest and check those places out that do reach out to you because they see value in you. They see a way that you can fit into their program and help them. And so having a, an open mind and following the trail of interest is something I think that's it's really, really important. I think it's hard when players in high school I know are told, make your list. Well, it's tough because if you want to be recruited, it's great to have a list, but at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter what your list is, right? Like the other the school is the one that needs to reach out to you. So where it's great to have a list and reach schools and places you're going to continue to email and reach out to, keep an open mind because somebody down the road may reach out to you that might not have been on that initial list. And that could be your forever home and a place that would be a perfect fit for you, as far as, as far as the lacrosse piece goes. So there are a few things. I don't know how many that was, but that's hopefully
Well, the,
the point.
I mean, the whole thing about September 1st, I'm glad you did bring that up because I think as, you know, being head coach of the 26 team and kind of going through that process with a lot of them, there is a real reality. And I want to, as the director, make sure I voice it more that it is really the beginning. As much as, you know, you've had the looks and people might have been tapping you on your profile, that it really is a starting process, and just getting the whole family on board with that. And then also, as you said, like keeping an open mind, like, because I mean, I'm still like, oh my gosh, like I've never heard of that school or that school. And especially D2 or D3 programs, I like, as the sport is growing, I think more and more of those schools are popping up, which could be great opportunities. And I do have some 26s on that path now where they're looking, and they're in the more of the D2, D3 process. And I always remember when we did a panel a few years ago, you were on it, and you said follow the trail of interest. And I think that is huge, you know, because you do want them, obviously, it's like that dating thing. Like if they're liking you back, then that means something and you should look into it, you know, all your opportunities. So, what do you think are like a few questions that you think every kid or every player should be asking coaches during the process? Like when they're in the process, what are things they need to be making sure, you know?
Well, I think, we're in a really, this might change kind of the course of discussion for a second, but we're in a really unique time in college athletics. And I think our programs across the country at all different levels are faced with a fair bit of uncertainty about where things are headed. And I'm talking about there's just the massive lawsuit that's sitting in the courts right now, the House versus the NCAA, and it's basically, about revenue sharing with players, with players. So the schools that opt in are able to revenue share with players up to $20 million. Now, don't that's not going to lacrosse. Most of this is going to your footballs and your basketballs. But part of this lawsuit is putting roster limits on programs. And so, for women's lacrosse, the roster limit that's a part of this is 38 for women's teams, for Division I, for the schools that opt in to this lawsuit. And I think, that the reason I bring this up is because this was a big piece of discussion amongst recruiting and amongst our staff and how we're looking at things moving forward. Our class sizes are getting smaller. We can't just fill spots just to fill them. We need to take smaller classes because if you need to keep somebody down the road for maybe a red shirt year, or someone gets injured and you want to keep them, you need to have a spot for them. And so that's, I think, one of the driving parts of discussion that is new this year. It's new for this recruiting year because we're looking at this becoming effective for next year. So I think, that's something is how has the roster limits impacted your program? How many people are you interested in taking in this class? Because some coaches may be looking to take four kids in a class. And if they've reached out to 30 people on September 1, where am I in there? Is there a timeline? Is it the first four people that decide that they're going to come? Because then the other 26 are just they're done. So it's just every school's kind of operating differently. Some people won't be under the roster limits. That's my understanding if their school's not opting in to the revenue sharing. But I think that's a piece of it is how many people are you looking to take in this class? How many people are you reaching out to? What is my timeline? Just kind of stuff like that, which I think should kind of guide the conversation because there's a concern too. If you wait too long, you're going to miss out on your roster spot, right? If there's an opportunity for six kids and a school's reached out to 30 people and you're going to visit schools for a couple of months, there you're not going to have a spot there. And so just finding that out, if that is something that the school is very limited on, is there definitely a spot? Is there a timeline? You know, where am I on that list? I think those are all questions that are valid and worth discussion, because I think it's important to know as a parent, it's important to know as a kid kind of where you stand and what you're looking like for that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, definitely, navigating with the 26s through that this year, and it kind of being brand new, where there were 10 to 12 spots maybe with a school, and now there's only six. So I was wondering, and I know we kind of chatted a little bit about this because it's complicated, like the whole roster capping. And the lawsuit and how it all ties in together. But and I'm sure you guys are constantly, learning about it and making sure. As a school, are you able to, like this year, were you able to opt into it, or did you have to do the roster cap of 38 this year? Like, that was a little confusing too.
So everything, the court case should be settled in April, is what the initial timeline is. So the roster size will go into effect for next year. So there are a lot of programs out there that have to cut spots. They have to either cut recruited kids, they have to cut kids on their roster to come within that limit. But this is more so, for again, any school that's opting in to revenue share any amount of money with their players will be held to the certain limits. And that goes into effect for next year.
And we were saying, as when we talked about it before, that it will continue to stay with each, like, just so the kids know, like, each class in the next number of years will probably hover around this four to six new, would you say,
I
or?
would, well, I think that class sizes will start to be a little smaller. And there's also a chance, I mean, yeah, there's so many things with the NCAA right now that you just kind of never know where things are going to fall. But I do think the schools that are opt in will have, because they have hard limits, there's hard lines, but that's not everyone. You know, at this point, too, if you're not revenue sharing with your players, which are schools that really are sharing big time football and basketball are typically what we're seeing, then there's potentially opportunities for some of those rosters to have larger numbers. So it really depends. And that's why I think that's a valid question for the school. Do you have a limit? You know, when you are finally talking to coaches and going through the recruiting process, is there a limit on the number of kids you're taking? Kind of what's your timeline for all of this, too? You know, because it could be, hey, I have six spots and I'm taking the first six kids that commit. You know,
Yeah.
it's worth knowing for somebody. And maybe you're not comfortable with that and you need to visit, and that's fine. But understanding what you're doing and understanding kind of the situation that you're in and understanding the situation the school's in so you can make the best decision for you and your family.
Yeah, no, I agree with that, because I do feel like we had a kid or two where they kind of put it off, and then, opportunities were passed. So yeah, that's a really good point to make. So another thing that is evolving, and I feel like from prospect camps, like where Maryland has their own prospect days, and then there's a lot of showcases like flooding our emails, right? So what's quality as a director, as a coach, as a head coach? I get a lot of questions of, Robin, what is this showcase? Like, is this a quality showcase? Are these coaches really going to be there? It's listed, you're listed as the coaches to be there, and it's like, how do you choose what showcases you're going to go to? It seems like now they're doing showcases where they want to get like five to eight coaches there instead of just like one, so it makes sense. It's efficient, I guess, for coaches.
Yeah, it's a lot. And it's a lot to navigate as a parent and a coach and a college coach, because there's something every day. You know, we could look at our summer calendar and I'm like, I could watch lacrosse every single day of the summer. And my daughter would have thought she could play lacrosse every single day of the summer. So I think it is tough to navigate. I think it's fair as for a club coach or a high school coach to even ask the college coaches, are you going to be at the showcase? Is this really, something worth going to? And I do think when you're an athlete coming up, if you find somewhere that has schools that you're interested in, then that's a great opportunity. I think getting on schools' campuses and learning from the coaching staff is a great opportunity. Some of these showcases have one, know, one coach there and 400 kids, which is hard to kind of rotate through, you know, and really get the full experience. So, getting on campus is something that's really special, but I do think it's a fair question, you know, to ask the college coaches working, is this, you know, a great, is this a good event? Or even ask people that, you know, you're friends with, like, what kind of events are you looking at? Is this a good one? Is this good for exposure? I'm interested in the Ivies. Is this somewhere I should go, et cetera, stuff like that.
Right. Yeah, I feel like I'm trying to do like logical thinking and just telling, you know, if we know who's kind of organizing it, running, it's always nice to be familiar with that so you know it's run well, it's, you know, they're very organized. And then also if it's somewhat local and there's a bunch of the coaches that you're saying are interested and they're interested in those schools, it makes sense. But then also getting experiences, going out, you know, going on campus, I think just the experience itself, even if that school winds up not being interested in you, it's like it's an experience of you deciding, oh, I like city school versus not a city school. So I think meshing in a little bit of everything and just being wise about your choices. I mean, it's hard. It's hard to
It is.
navigate.
And there's a lot out there. I do think it's something that is different from, you know, with the whole kind of the club circuit and these showcases and stuff is still remembering as a high school athlete, you want to get better. You want to improve. You want to become a stronger player and you need to learn and you need to put yourself in positions where you can get coached and you can learn and you can play with different people and you can just try to get better rather than just playing games all the time. And so I think there's some value too in the instruction part of it, which can sometimes feel a little lost just because the showcase, a lot of it's games and just kind of getting out there and exposure and stuff like that. So if you're fortunate to have the opportunity to go to different prospect days that are instructional, or maybe there are multiple coaches and there's ways to just kind of continue to improve your game, that's how you're going to get yourself on the field wherever you go, is because you're going to be better, you know, and you're going to keep improving. And that's just something I feel like just maybe it's just gotten lost a little bit with the amount of games that everyone keeps playing is just that instructional part.
Yeah, no, that's great. So a little bit more on like, you know, I'm kind of asking you, what's your favorite kind of player to coach, and what are you looking for in a player, you specifically? But this would help like players realize like these are things that coaches are looking at. You know, like they might it might be aha to some of these kids. I know we've talked about, you know, social media presence, things like that, just the way kids are representing themselves on the field, their body language, all those things. But like for Kathy, what is your favorite kind of player to coach, and what are you looking for in a player?
So I think when we first watch a team, maybe we haven't seen before, the things that stand out are speed, you know, overall athleticism and good stick work. They're the pieces of it. Doesn't matter what offense you're running, it doesn't matter what defense you're running. They're the pieces that really can stand out when a coach first sits on the sideline and watches a game as things go on, because you know, you watch people multiple times and things go. I think you kind of hit the nail on the head a lot. Like, I'm really team chemistry and culture is very important to me. And I want people in here that genuinely not just love the game, but are great teammates that look out for the people around them and are celebrating each other's success, that maybe have that maybe make a bad play, like you said, and can figure out how to react and have body language. It's like, all right, so I made a terrible shot, but I'm going to work really hard to get the ball back, you know, rather than kind of hang my head and the shoulders drop and stuff. And so I think that body language is something you see as you keep going down the line, you and you watch players more and more. But initially, and that's again what recruiting works, is it's everybody kind of views things a little bit differently, right? And there could be a season where you sit on the sideline and like, I need a defender who's a great face guarder, right? Who's somebody that can do X, Y, and Z, or I need a person that is demonstrated that they can, I don't know, clear the ball all the time, you know, that they're able to run 70 yards past everybody. I need someone faster. I need a crease defender, or I need a lefty attacker behind. And so some stuff gets to be position specific, but I think when you're generally talking in the beginning, the speed, the athleticism, being a great teammate, body language speaks volumes. And once those things can kind of catch your attention and stand out, the rest of the pieces, I think, follow from that.
Right. Good info. This is a big one for me. I feel very passionate about this because, we have the opportunity to work with young ladies and, pour into them daily. And so, I feel like what do you think that a female athlete needs to hear the most or repeatedly in the world today?
That's
It's
a
a big
great. Well,
one.
and it's and yeah, and I think that in the beginning is everyone's role on your team matters. Everybody's role. Whether you are someone that's scoring all the goals, whether you're making all the saves, or whether you don't play for 1 second, or you're out injured, your role matters. And you're important. You're important to our success. You're important as a person. You're important as a friend and a teammate. And the most successful that we can be as a team is because everybody's role is important, and we've done what we've done together. The thing I say all the time to my girls that I think is so important is your best is good enough. I think we tend as girls to hold ourselves like we think, or everything else is perfect, or we need to be perfect in this and that. Your best is good enough, right? Like, you're going to put yourself out there. We're going to make mistakes. And that's natural and normal. And your best is good enough. We're trying to do so many different things. And as women, we wear so many different hats, and we try to be all these things to all different people. And I think sometimes it's even good for us to remember, that our best is good enough. We're trying the best we can, and we may not have all of our ducks in a row, but we're going to get there, and we're going to get through it. And so I think when I have a team of players that can believe they're given their best, and that they matter, that they are important, and they are important people, and they are good friends. And lacrosse is lacrosse. It is, yes, I'm a lacrosse coach. I know. And that's it. But it's just lacrosse, and I think in the grand scheme of things, we are trying to raise and coach people that are good people, that are going to take care of each other, that are going to look out for each other, that are going to be good teammates, and know that they're important and they matter.
Awesome. No, I feel like that you just like stamped your kind of your team chemistry. And that should definitely be a shirt that y'all have.
I'll talk. I'm
Your best
noting
is
to talk
good
about it my
enough.
first
I
team
love
meeting.
it.
Right.
Because I think, when you get into life and you have your family and it's you're right, you're gonna wear many ro hats and many roles as a female. You're working full time, you're running a household, and sometimes you're not things are gonna fall, short or but to have like everyone feel like they matter and like it's like the whole thing. It's not ever just one or two or whatever, but it's the whole unit, making you better. So I love that. Last thing, and I just thought of this for you as like the last question, but what does the field mean to Kathy Reese?
The field?
Field.
What do you mean, like the lacrosse field?
Yeah, it's kind of an abstract question.
Yes.
But like when I think about like it, like when I step on the field, I think even now, I could get teary-eyed just because of all
Memories and the
the things.
passion. Yeah.
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 So
Well,
what?
I think that's because we both have jobs in a sport that we love because we loved our experience. We love the game. So you say, what does the field mean? Every time that I have a chance to work with my players, it's my favorite part of the day, right? It's the people that make what I do fun, and being able to be around them. And when you take the field for a competition, knowing that you're walking out to an area which means so much to you, with people that you love, and you've so many memories because it's been a big part of who we are, and just a big part of our experience, and spent so much time there competing, and you've had so many joyful moments and so many sad moments and moments of heartbreak and moments of celebration. And it's like, it's kind of done everything. But it's been a sport that we love, that we've enjoyed, that we've been a part of, and you get to be a part of it now. Gosh, I could never play now. I am so far removed from our playing days, with watching how awesome these athletes are at all different levels. But it just puts a smile on your face. You know, you're excited when you see the little ones playing, and you're like, gosh, this is really fun to work with you and know that you have, you know, so much ahead of you. And then in high school, to see everybody kind of create their own path and figure out more of who they are as women and where they're looking to go and where they're looking to head. And then they get to college and watching that shared excitement and enthusiasm and just thrill of competition and loving people, recognizing that the game's bigger than them individually is really special, you know. And so when you look at the field, I mean, all of my kids play. You know, my husband played at Maryland and played professionally for a gazillion years in both indoor and outdoor. And so the sport means a lot to our family. But again, it's lacrosse, and I think it's the people and the memories that we've made along the way are what make it fun.
Yeah, it's almost like you're saying it's like a container where all of this beautiful stuff of life can happen, whether, you know, it's teaching us how to be a teammate, be loyal, be a hard worker, you know, have our heart broken, and then also have the greatest memories of all, you know, time. So anyway, I just thought it was a cool question and
Was a cool question.
think about it. Maybe you'll continue to think about it. But thank you so much for your time, Kathy. I
Well,
so
thanks for
appreciate
having me.
this. And well, hopefully we can do a part two one day. So
Would
looking
love it.
forward.
Would love it.
All right, thanks so much.
All right, thanks.